reminder about the special talk today at 2:30 by Robion Turkey on transactions of rules in this room. And it will be a 20-minute talk. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce Dror Barnahan, and he will tell us about polynomial time, not polynomial.
Thank you. So I'm in a ranting mood. So first of all, my talk will follow a handout. I hope you all have a copy. If not, you should pick up one. The ranting is, my talk will follow a handout, and I think all talks should follow a handout, because, you know, you run a few slides forward, and there was a lovely formula or a picture a few slides back, and it's out of my sight, therefore out of my mind, therefore I lost you. So please try to do the same. And the second thing is that my talk is on video, and the video will be on my website at the URL that's at the top of the handout. And I wish we all did this all the time. So Misha Kovanov gave a wonderful talk. Where is he? And I wish I could listen to it again. Or, I mean, at least a little bit beyond the point where I was lost. I really wish everybody had done that. And the last thing is, my abstract. So it's something I strongly feel about, that the value of things in mathematics is somehow inversely correlated to their computational complexity. So, you know, the human brain is essentially a linear time machine, right? The time it takes you to understand what's going on, to read a book, is proportional to the length of the book. Very rarely you run an exponential time algorithm in your mind. So you're thinking, do I tell her that I love her, or do I not tell her that I love her? And you spend the whole night flipping back and forth, and really you're examining a tree of possibilities. Okay? But very rarely you do it. Routinely you do linear time algorithms, and we don't even understand that. Okay, so linear time algorithm, anything we do in linear time is absolutely valuable. If you can do something in polynomial time, okay, maybe. If you can do something in exponential time, it's often not very useful. Knot theory is actually an occasional exception, because there are so many knots with relatively few crossings that even exponential time algorithms can sometimes do something. Okay, and beyond that, it really has to have a truly lovely philosophical significance if you are to consider it seriously. So basically, you have to justify your work with even better philosophy. Anyway. That's for my ranting, and now my apologies. So what I'm going to tell you about is very much work in progress, and help is much needed, because I'm slow and feeble-minded, but I have to admit that I'm not helping you to help me very much, because not much is written, and partially not much is written because, you know, I want it done before it's written. On the other hand, well, okay, that's last. Anyway, so first of all, I want to tell you a little bit about tangles and why I like tangles. And I think the fourth page of my handout is a bit of further ranting about why I like handouts. Why I like tangles. So anyway, what's a tangle? So a tangle is a piece of a knot drawn in a piece of the plane. It's not essential that the strands will start at the top, at the bottom, and end at the top. It's not important at all. This is an example, but it's completely irrelevant. What is essential is that the strands will be numbered. So each strand has an identity, 1, 2, 3, and 4 in this case. Okay? And I want to tell you about two operations about tangles, which I care about. And these are the disjoint union. So basically, if you have two tangles, T1 and T2, you can put them side by side. And you can complain that the ordering of the ends is a bit ill-defined, so for the moment, either choose a definition or believe me that it's irrelevant for what will follow. Okay? And the other operation is the stitching operation. So this was a binary operation. It takes two tangles and outputs one. And this is, the stitching operation is a unary operation. It takes a tangle T, and well, the stitching operation has indices, so it's called MABC or stitch AB, calling the result C. And the assumption is that the tangle has two strands labeled A and B in it, and the stitching operation stitches the head of A to the tail of B so as to make a bigger, or to make a single tangle in which A is connected to B, and calls the result C, the resulting strand C. So I'm assuming that C is a label that previously was not within the set of labels of our strand. Okay? And I should say that this stitching operation satisfies a condition which I call meta-associativity, which is, well, it cannot be associativity because it's a unary operation, not a binary operation, but it's kind of like associativity. So if you stitch A to B, calling the result X, and then, so double slash means compose operations in the correct order, so from left to right, not from right to left, okay? So stitch A and B, calling the result X, and then stitch their X and C and calling the result, and call the result Y, is the same as stitching B and C, calling the result, you know, maybe I'll draw it and then it will be clearer. So basically, if you have a tango with three strands in it, A, B, and C, and just for the purpose of the discussion, let's assume that A goes this way, B goes this way, and C goes that way, then stitching A to B, and then stitching the result, B to C, is the same as doing it in the opposite order, right? It's the same as doing first this stitching and then that stitching, okay? So this is meta-associativity, and maybe I'll give you a couple of examples. So once you have these operations, you can use them together to make bigger operations, of course. So for example, there is this operation tau, which takes a four-strand tangle, or in general, a tangle with an even number of strands, and caps all pairs of strands at the top. And this is, of course, the composition of n stitchings. So you stitch the first to the second, and then the second to the third, and so on. And likewise, there is this operation kappa, which does what we did before at the top. It does it at the bottom, but at the top, it caps sort of with a shift of one. So the image of tau, if you start here with two n strands, the image of tau is in tangles with just n strands, and the image of kappa is the in tangles with just one strand, which is the same as knots. Okay, why do I like tangles so much? So first of all, because they are finitely presented as stated here with these operations. So let me explain why are they finitely presented. So suppose you wanted to create an arbitrary tangle from using these operations and a small number of generators. Well, the generators will simply be the ordinary crossings. Suppose you want to make an arbitrarily complicated tangle from the ordinary crossings, well, you write the crossings that you are going to need for your tangle. You give names to the strands, so 1, 2, 3, 4, I don't know. And then you stitch 1, 2, 3, and stitch whatever to whatever, and stitch whatever to whatever. And after a number of stitchings, you can clearly generate whatever you wanted. Okay? Now, why is this good? So it means that if you want to define an invariant of tangles, It's enough to define it on the generators, namely the crossings and the overcrossings, sorry, the undercrossings and the overcrossings, and specify how it behaves under stitching.
Are you living in the virtual world?
What?
Are you living in the virtual world?
At the moment, I don't want to introduce it, but yes.
Okay.
Second point is that you can do divide and conquer computations. So this is a conference in not theory, so probably you've all seen examples where you have an invariant which is hard to compute on knots, and it's perhaps even harder on tangles, but if you cut the knot in half, you get a tangle with half the number of crossings, and therefore efficiency is, and therefore the computation is much, much, much faster. And then you do two fast computations for the two halves of the knot, and then pay a certain price for assembling them together. But in principle, you can speed up computations a great deal by using tangles. The next reason why I like tangles is algebraic knot theory, and I want to say a few words about that. So first of all, let me remind you a little bit about ribbon knots. So a ribbon knot is a knot which bounds a disk. So the knot here is in red. The strands are shown in red. And a ribbon knot is a knot that bounds a disk, and the disk is shown here as a bluish membrane. Now, that disk is allowed to have some singularities. In fact, it's allowed to have so-called ribbon singularities, which locally look like the picture on the left. However, there are some singularities that are forbidden. So it's not allowed to have a clasp singularities, such as the singularity shown here on the right, or in the middle, okay? Now, and an example of a ribbon knot is shown here. So this is maybe 6-1, or maybe it's just the connect sum of two trefoils, I'm not sure. But anyway, it clearly bounds a disk. The disk is shown here. And there are two ribbon singularities, one here and one here. So there is a famous open problem about ribbon knots, which is whether every slice knot is also ribbon. And a conjecture, or what most people believe, I think, is that some slice knots are not ribbon. And in fact, Gomes, Schneiderman, and Thompson have an example of, or a proposed example of a knot which is slice, but might not be ribbon. But the problem is that we don't have techniques for showing that a knot is not ribbon. Well, in fact, we do have one technique, and it's the Fox-Milner theorem. So the Fox-Milner theorem says that the Alexander polynomial of a ribbon knot is always of the form A of t is equal to f of t times f of 1 over t. So in some sense, a polynomial times its conjugate, so in some sense, a norm. So if you compute the Alexander polynomial of a knot, and it is not of this form, then you know it is not ribbon. Unfortunately, slice knots have also the same form. So this is not going to help you to disprove the ribbon slice conjecture. This said, let's go back to tangles and I'll tell you why I care. So remember the two operations that I mentioned before. So if you have a tangle with two end strands, you can cut it at the top, call it tau, and cut it at the bottom, and also at the top with a shift, and call it kappa. So this is an operation from the space of tangles with two end strands to, well, tau is to the space of tangles with n strands, and kappa is to the space of tangles with one strand, namely two knots. So here's a lovely observation. So a knot is ribbon if and only if you can find a tangle here whose kappa is this knot and whose tau is the unknot. And if you want, it's a lovely exercise. Try to prove it. Okay? It's not terribly hard. So basically, The set of all ribbon knots is you pull back the A knot from here, and you get a certain subset here, the inverse image of the A knot, pull back using tau, and then you project it using kappa, and this is the set of ribbon knots. So now, suppose you had an invariant of tangles, which is well behaved under the operations that I specified before, namely which intertwines the operations that I mentioned before. Then it will also intertwine tau and kappa, because tau and kappa are compositions of these stitching operations. And therefore, this little triangle will be pushed to an algebraic triangle. So instead of tau n, tau 2n, and tau 1, you will have an, a2n, and a1, where these are the target spaces, the algebraic target spaces of our invariants, or some spaces of polynomials or something. And this is the target space for tau n, this is the tn, this is the target space for t2n, and this is the target space for t1. And then, clearly, and if a knot k is ribbon, then it will fall here in A1 in the set, well, it will fall within, oops, this was supposed to be, this was supposed to be tau and kappa. So the invariant of a ribbon knot will always fall in the set of all kappa projections of things in A to N whose tau projection is 1. Now, in principle, this is an algebraically defined set. So, in principle, it could be less than the full space. And in principle, if I have a knot and I compute its Z and it does not fall within this algebraically defined set, then I know this knot is not ribbon. Okay? So in principle, you have a criteria for a knot to be non-ribbon if you have a well-behaved invariant of tangles. Now, from this perspective, faster is clearly better, because at the end of the day, I will want to compute my invariant on knots with 48 crossings or so, and computation is exponential time, then I have no chance. But also, leaner is meaner. So let me explain. What I want to say is that sort of the slower the target space grows, the better. So you can expect that the target space of an invariant will grow in n. You can expect that invariant of n component tangles will take values in target spaces that grow as a function of n. But the slower this growth is, the better the chances of my strategy to work are. Okay? And why is this? So basically, suppose that a to n is very, very fat relative to an, so it's a much bigger space, then the condition for a zeta to be inside a to n so that its projection in a to n is 1, in an is 1, is a relatively mild condition. And therefore, the set of zetas here is still pretty fat. Basically, if a to n is much fatter than an, then the set of zetas that project to 1 here is still pretty fat. And then when you project it under kappa, there is a fair chance that this projection will be everything and your condition will be empty. So basically, the slower the growth of A as a function of n is, the better. And of course, the growth rate of the target space is correlated to the computability of the invariant. So I'm really looking for the same thing. So when I say faster and better and leaner is meaner, it's really the same thing. Okay? Good. So, maybe I should have said that this is an example for a tangle whose which fits into this triangle. So, whose tau is the a-knot and whose kappa is a ribbon knot. Okay. Anyway, so here's the first theorem. So I claim that there is a unique invariant Z0 taking values on pure framed S-component tangles. So pure means no closed components. Framed means the usual thing, meaning I don't mod out by Rider-Meister 1. I don't want to think about Rider-Meister 1. S-component means that the set of components is labeled, so the components are labeled by the elements of some finite set S. And my invariant takes values in some space gamma 0 of S, which is the product of a ring R with S by S matrices on the ring R, where the ring R also depends on the set of labels, but it's the ring of Laurent polynomial, or sorry, rational functions with integer coefficients in variables that in themselves are in a bijection with the set of strands, with the set of labels of strands of S. So, if you want to look to see what a value of this invariant would look like, so the value of the invariant would be an S by S matrix, so some collection of some array of numbers, and a scalar, because it's R cross S by S matrices over R. So the scalar would be denoted omega, and I'll write it in the upper left corner. And then the rows and columns of the matrix are labeled by the names of the strands of the tangles. So I'll put these names on the top on the right and here on, as a column on the left. These are just the elements of the set S. Okay? Anyway, I claim that there is a unique such invariant which intertwines the disjoint union operation and the stitching operation with the following algebraic operations. So the operation corresponding to disjoint union is, so if you have the invariants of two tangles, and one of them is omega 1, the scalar part is omega 1, the matrix part is A1, the other one, the scalar part is omega 2, the matrix part is A2, then the corresponding disjoint union will be, well, you multiply the scalar parts, and you take the diagonal, the block diagonal sum of the two matrix parts. Okay? So this is disjoint union. And stitching is the following. So suppose you have a tangle with strands A and B, and perhaps a further list of strands S. And I want to tell you how to stitch A and B, calling the result C. So the input should be an S by S matrix whose rows and columns are labeled A and B, and then perhaps further labels S, likewise for the columns, and therefore alpha is the entry at the AA place, so it's a scalar, beta is the entry in the AB place, so it's again a scalar, theta is actually stands for a whole row of scalars because right, A is a single thing and S is a whole row of things. So you can remember that it's a row by looking at this horizontal bar in the middle. Likewise, epsilon is a whole row, phi is a column of extra things, and psi is a column of extra things. And this big box here, uppercase psi, is an n minus 2 by n minus 2 array of things. And then the scalar part is omega. And then I have to tell you how stitching A to B, calling the result C, is. So stitching works by, okay, first of all, you identify the variables TA and TB. So remember, each of these entries is really a rational function in n variables corresponding to the strand of the knot. So first of all, you identify the variables a and b, calling the result, so ta and tb, and calling the result tc. Second, you let mu, just to make the formulas easier, you let mu be 1 minus beta, where beta is the entry at the AB place. And then you produce a new matrix, whose scalar part is mu times omega, and whose matrix part is given by the ugly formulas written here. And if you look at these formulas very carefully, well, the CC entry should be a scalar, because C is an individual strand, and indeed it is made by combining scalars. The CS entry should in fact be a whole row, and if you look at it, it has theta near it, here, multiplied by various scalars and add to which you add epsilon, so it's again a row. Likewise, this is a combination of columns, and this is a matrix plus a column times a row, and a column times a row gives again a matrix. Okay? So this all makes sense. And finally, in order to put up the definition, I have to tell you what it is on the generators. And so I hereby declare that Z0 maps the overcrossing with labels A and B, and the undercrossings with label A and B. So A always labels the upper strand. Hence I had to switch the labels here. So it maps these two things to the scalar matrix combination, in which the scalar part is 1 and the matrix part is written over here. Okay? So at least the statement of the theorem should be clear.
Okay. So Z naught looks very Alexander-ish.
I will say it in a minute. Okay? So why do I like this invariant? Okay? So the matrix part. The matrix part, but that's exactly the point. You know, I want you to be able to read ahead. You know, if there is a part where you feel like you want to sleep, you read ahead and then you see that the rest is not interesting and indeed you can fall asleep. Or maybe the rest is excellent and then you make an effort. Okay. So the matrix part of the invariant, if you ignore the scalar part, so the matrix part is a stitching formula for the Burau and Gassner invariant. So first of all, it extends these invariants to tangles, and then it tells you how they behave under stitching. The scalar part, when you restrict your attention to knots, is the Alexander polynomial. Maybe I'll skip the details here, but if you know this invariant, you can recover the multivariable Alexander polynomial without much effort. Here is an important point. This is the fastest algorithm I know to compute the Alexander polynomial. Maybe I should not spend the time right now to tell you why, but it actually is faster than any known algorithm I am aware of. And at some point, when I said it to Nathan, I said it in a talk in which Nathan Dunfield was present, and apparently Nathan was computing Alexander polynomials of various random knots with up to 1,000 crossings, so he had some basis for comparison, and so he implemented this algorithm, and indeed it turned out to be much faster than his algorithm. Okay. Much faster, I think, by a factor of 50 or so. And for a polynomial time algorithm, this is noteworthy. For an exponential time algorithm, it's not noteworthy. For a polynomial time algorithm running on 1,000 crossing knots and taking a few hours, cutting the runtime by 50 makes it a few minutes and makes it noteworthy. I should say that there are also formulas for strand deletion, so I didn't mention it, but there are other operations on tangles, so you can delete a strand, and I know how it affects the invariant, and you can double a strand, so replace a strand by a pair of strands that follow the same trajectory, and there are also formulas for that. And then, Here is an important point. So every step of the computation is the invariant of something. So let me explain. Standard computation of the Alexander polynomial go as follows. So very quickly, in linear time, essentially, you construct a matrix, a big, well, not so big, n by n matrix, and then you put the matrix into the computer computes the determinant. The determinant takes n cubed time, in fact, n to the fourth, because the matrix, because the entries are polynomials. So the crunching takes a long time, relatively long time, and within that length of time, you essentially, as a topologist, you have no idea what the computer is doing. Okay, the computer is doing Gaussian elimination, row reduction, I don't know what, but this, all of these things have nothing to do with topology. So the intermediate matrices that you see as you run the computation have nothing to do with topology. Now, what happens here is that the computation breaks down, or I'm giving you stepping stones across, or n stepping stones, roughly n stepping stones, across this big abyss of ununderstandable computations. And within each stepping stone, or at each stepping stone, you are computing the invariant of something meaningful. Namely, in order to compute the invariant of a big n crossing knot, what you do, as I mentioned before, is, well, you place the crossings of the knot in the plane, and then you stitch, 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 and you have roughly n stitchings to do. But after it, now each stitching takes relatively short amount of time, and after each stitching, what you have is the invariant of a tangle. So not something random and arbitrary. You should care about it, especially if you care about categorification. So
I had an ambition to push Misha into the pod that you seem to have done it for me.
Sorry, you have what? What? Oh, Misha. When
I had an ambition to push Misha in, but you seem to have done it for me.
Yeah, okay, but something bad just happened, and I'm not sure why. And I doubt it's related to me. So, okay, well, this is going to make a mess. I have to, I'm plugging and unplugging, and I hope I'll go back to where I was. Oops. So, some cable is not tight enough, and I doubt it's on my end, but I don't know what to do about it. Well, that's what we're going to have, I'm sorry. Maybe I'll even... okay, I'm sorry,
what?
What's it
like?
Sorry? Less light, but no, this is as little light as possible, but the pictures are ugly and there is nothing I can do about it. On my screen they're showing well, and all the cables seem to be all right. Actually, does anybody have an alternative adapter? Well, okay, you know what, forget it. Let's just continue. Okay, let's just continue. Yeah, but it's ugly. Anyway, so this is especially interesting if you believe that every knot invariant should be categorified. Because I don't know if I believe that myself, but if you believe that, then you have serious trouble categorifying determinants. We don't know how to do it. However, but now I'm telling you how to break down a computation of a determinant to n steps, in each of which only addition and multiplication and division occur. I'll say a word about division in a minute. And And after each step, what you get is actually something meaningful. So if you really believe in categorification, that thing in itself should be categorified. So basically, I'm giving you stepping stones on the way to categorifying the Alexander polynomial in an algebraic manner. Now, as for the rational functions that occur, let me tell you that I can prove that. In this matrix that you get here, well, if you multiply the matrix part by omega, all denominators disappear. So it becomes a matrix of polynomials. So it's actually not too far from a matrix of polynomials. Unfortunately, my proof of this property is inductive and requires exponentially many conditions. So the invariant itself is polynomial, but the conditions that you need in order to prove that it is indeed polynomial are depend on all the minors of the matrix, and there are exponentially many of these. So so any categorification of this invariant should be aware of why things are polynomial, and therefore should be exponential time, even though the invariant itself is polynomial time. Anyway, I can barely read it. So maybe the last thing I wanted to say, the last sort of bragging point about this invariant, is that all of it fits in one column of my handout, including propaganda, which you've already seen, and implementation, which I'm about to show. So here is the implementation of this invariant. No, it's
maybe you know, turn it off and turn it on.
Turn it off and turn it on.
And they lose a lot of time.
Refuses to turn on. And how long will it blink?
Perhaps
20
seconds.
Can I ask a question?
What? Yeah, sure.
On the paper, since you told us something that happens for reversal, with reversal.
Sorry?
So there are formulas for string deletion, doubling, and reversal.
Yes.
What is reversal?
Just reverse the orientation of a strand.
So the invariant worries about the orientations as well?
Yes.
So if you have...
Oh, good. Sorry.
So I guess if you have two strands sort of going out the top, oriented the same way, you'd like to stitch them, the orientation.
So the orientation is, you can only stitch head to tail. If you happen to have two strands, then you can reverse the orientation and then stitch.
So you were going to tell us that about the code at the bottom.
And apparently on and off and switching the adapter didn't do it.
It says replace.
What? Oh, it says replace LAN. Well, sorry, I can't replace
it. It's okay, we all have a handout.
Okay, anyway, yeah, it could have been worse. Yeah, so as for the implementation, maybe I'll skip the key idea. I'll tell you that you can ignore the part that is in truly small print, but print because it's only formatting. The actual implementation is in the second box. It's really, really short. I wish I could tell you more about it, but if you look at it, you'll see the formulas. You'll see right here the formulas that were printed in tech before. Okay, so it really is the same invariant. I hit enter, it's put into my computer, and now I can start verifying things. So I can verify meta-associativity. I hit enter, and the computer outputs true. Then I can verify the Rademeister 3 move. After all, it's an invariant of tangles. If I want to verify the Rademeister 3, all I have to do is to enter it. So I enter a negative crossing, a positive crossing between strands 5 and 1, between strands 6 and 2, anyway, whatever. Then I stitch 1 and 4 into 1, 2 and 5 into 2, 3 and 6 into 3. So these are the stitchings that makes this crossing, this side of the Rademeister move from 3 crossings. Then I check if it's the same as the other one. I hit enter, the computer outputs two matrices that are the same, so they are equal. And finally, if I wanted to compute the invariant of some big knot, I'll just punch it in. So in other words, I'll subdivide it into crossings. So here there is a crossing between strand probably 1 and 12, but I can barely see. Here there is a crossing between strands 7 and 3, so I enter it as a crossing between strands 12 and 1, another crossing between strands 2 and 7, and so on. And then I have the computer stitch all of them, so I have a loop that stitches all strands in order. I hit enter, I cannot jump that far, but I've hit enter before, so the output is printed here, and this is the Alexander polynomial of this lot. So everything really is computable and simple. I should say that, how much time do I have? Sorry, all of this, now I cannot even read my time. So, what?
Relax, it's gonna be okay.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, you're supposed to make me think, not to make me relax. There is a variant which makes sense also for closed components, and there is a picture of Eva Halacheva here because she found this trace, and she's somewhere in this room, I think, here. And but there are some weaknesses. So one weakness I already mentioned, and this is that my proof that it's polynomial, that the results are polynomials, is actually exponential time. Okay, so you can prove, so you can calculate everything. So everything is guaranteed to work, but the guarantee is expensive. Okay, and the trace we don't fully understand. Anyway, I still have to tell you where this is coming from and why I think you can do better than it. Okay, so maybe I should have said right at the start that this really was an invariant of virtual tangles. And so all questions about where the strands are placed, in which order they appear, whether they're neighboring or not, are irrelevant. And let me remind you what virtual tangles are. So virtual tangles are the planar algebra generated by the crossing and the virtual crossing. That's the wrong way of viewing virtual crossings, of virtual tangles, but let's ignore it for a minute. Modulo all the moves that you probably know. So the Rademeister moves and the virtual Rademeister moves, and the mixed move between them. And alternatively, it's the circuit algebra, or the metamonoid generated by a crossing modulo the same relations. So circuit algebra, I maybe should not define, but it's the correct way to say planar algebras when you talk about virtual knots. And metamonoids again, maybe I should not define, but it's essentially a thing on which the stitching operation makes sense. So basically, it's the thing that you get from crossings by allowing stitchings which satisfy this meta-associativity property that I mentioned before. Anyway, then you do the standard thing that you do in finite type theory. So within this planar algebra or circuit algebra or metamonoid, there is the ideal generated by the differences between overcrossings and no crossings. Or sorry, between crossings and no crossings. And then the algebraic target space of a proposed invariant would be, well, the space where universal finite type invariants take values, and this is the product of I to the n modulo I to the n plus 1, and I'm sorry, I've raised gears and I'm speaking at the higher level now. This space turns out to be a certain space of diagrams, much like in the usual finite type theory, except for virtual tangles. These are slightly different diagrams. So these are diagrams that look like this, namely they have two vertical bars and nothing in between. Sorry, I think it's not nothing in between, but it's just the big, just the color that just got ruined. So there is a diagram here made of arrows that are allowed to meet in two types of vertices. Either both are trivalent, but the two types are either the two in, one out type or the one in, two out type. Modulus some relations, which again are not shown here, but are reminiscent of the STU and IHX relations that appear in ordinary finite type theory. And then there is a likely theorem, and I'm saying likely because it still needs to be worked out in detail, because it's written originally by Ettinghoff and Kashdan and by Enriquez in a completely different language. But anyway, there is a likely theorem that says that there is an invariant of tangles on our type of tangles with our operations, meaning disjoint union and stitching, which take values in this space of diagrams. And I'm suppressing a few issues. Now, unfortunately, this goes in completely the opposite direction of where I wanted to go. Namely, it's way too hard. So this space of diagrams grows very exponentially in size. And so the computation time of this invariant Z is, well, not to mention the fact that computing it is completely horrible, but also it would take a huge amount of time. But the idea is to look for good quotients of this target space. So, so let me tell you about a few. So one quotient indicated here very, very clearly is the W quotient. It's the quotient where you mod out by the co-vertices. So you declare that the vertices which are of the form one in, two out, which kind of stands for a co-bracket, so I'll call them the co-vertices. So you declare that the co-vertices are equal to zero. This quotient turns out to have a topological meaning in terms of welded knots, but I think I'll skip this topological meaning and tell you that, well, okay, there is indeed an invariant valued in this quotient. This quotient is fully describable in terms of only trees and wheels, and in fact, the end result is completely computable in terms of trees and wheels. And I have programs that do it, and here is the output for the Borromean tangle, and in principle, I can compute it for anything. However, it is still too hard. The number of colored wheels and the number of colored trees still grows exponentially, so it is still too hard. So I might want to look at further quotients. And then the next quotient to think about is the quotient, again, written very clearly over here. And this quotient is actually in the spirit of the comment I made at the very end of Lou Kaufman's talk last time. What is Lou here? I don't see. So it's in the spirit of the comment I made at the very end of his talk. So basically, these diagrams that I've described before, or these diagrams, can be interpreted as formulas that make sense in an arbitrary Lie bialgebra. You can ask yourself, can I restrict to some specific Lie bialgebra? What this means is, can I find all the relations that are satisfied by a specific Lie bialgebra, and then mod out by these relations? But restrict your attention to the relations which are somehow ideal in the appropriate sense. So that the operations will remain or local in the appropriate sense, so that all the operations will remain meaningful. So this is the relation written over here, and if you mod out by this relation, everything drops down to polynomial size, polynomial time, and in fact it drops down to the invariant I defined at the beginning. So this is excellent, except it's not newer, it's not better than what we had before. It is what we had before. So then the next idea is to, and I'll skip this, so the next idea is to mod out by the relation which corresponds, well, essentially to the Lie bialgebra underlying SL2. Or more precisely, it's just the relation which says, let's ignore all Lie bialgebras of dimension higher than 2. Or let's mod out by the relations that are satisfied by all Lie bialgebras of dimension 2. And again, the relations are not showing, but it's kind of cool to see why they correspond to dimension 2. But once you mod out by these relations, the quotients that you get contains only the parts of quantum algebra that you can see with Lie algebras of dimension up to 2, and this turns out to be essentially the Johnson-Alexander polynomials. This is still too hard, but then you can mod out by one further relation which does not make sense in the world of Lie algebras, and this is you can look at the one coquotients. So the one coquotient is the quotient where you mod out by anything that has 2 covertices or more. So you kill all situations where you have 2 covertices side by side. Once you do this, everything drops down to polynomial size and polynomial time. And in fact, I more or less understand the target space and more or less have formulas for, say, these are the formulas for the values of the crossing. I still don't have a stitching formula, and the reason is human complexity, not computational complexity. In other words, the formula is complicated and depends on many, many tiny details, which I still haven't worked out, and that's why help is needed. I guess I will skip the algebraic framework, and I will only tell you that I'm done. Sorry.
So what about the example?
Example? Oh, you mean the propaganda?
Yeah.
What about it?
Yeah.
We all believe in it. There is no reason to no reason to highlight it. I just put it on all my talks. Yes.
I just wasn't sure when you said about tau and kappa towards the beginning.
how you get the unknot in a entangle.
So I meant the ensemble.
So the untangle just means end strands that do not cross anything, do not touch anything.
Any other questions?
So you mean this picture of this knot that might be...
The picture here, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you compute?
Yeah, what's the status of the ribbon conjecture?
Open, and will. And however, I do feel I have a viable approach. Okay, and the approach is complete the details of all of this. So really produce a polynomial time computable invariant of knots, which extends to tangles as a polynomial time computable invariant. And again, I have a candidate. I have what's missing is lots of hard work. Compute the invariant of this. That should be within range because again, it's polynomial time, and this is only 48 crossings. And then you have to understand very carefully this algebraically defined set and see whether or not the invariant falls within it. If I had another hour, I might have told you what I know about this set. I don't understand it yet. It's a long-term project. It should take a few more years, but it's viable. It's not, it may work.
I'm
not sure we thanked
you
one time, but well, thank you. And there's a copy of Sarah's on the third floor. Talks start at 9:40. May I propose that you try to fix this before the next talk?
I'm not sure we'll use the
what?
Sorry, Rob will probably use the board if I know wrong.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.